Paul, how dare you? It's all your
wasting
fault.
Our time. Clearly, we have bigger things to be doing.
I know. All right, everybody. Hello. This is take two of our Indie Film Cafe episode for this month. This is your old pal, the sad, sad Moo Cow, otherwise known as Paul A. Presenza, trying so desperately to get this podcast recorded. And with me, I have...
Jonathan Moody, who is really mad at you for being sad about this. This is not the biggest deal in the world. We had worse. We recorded a whole episode before, and then it crashed on us.
I know.
It's all right. It happens.
Well, today we are joined by our new friend.
Joe. And if you don't know what they were just talking about, because I don't know that they prefaced it, we recorded about 15 minutes of this podcast, and it crashed and did not save, so...
Sad monkey.
Yep.
But just to let you know, Joe is joining us for this particular episode, which is a 1977 bizarre film called Sextet, with Mae West, Dom DeLuise, and a whole bunch of 70s icons who should have known better. And, we will be back to talk about this particular film after we listen to some mood music. Okay, guys, we are back. So... if we can summon up all of our energies and courage, maybe we can talk a little bit about this bizarre film.
First of all, we had a really good time. Like the last one, you pretty much summed the movie up before for us. So do you want to do that again?
Why not?
You're ready for your close-up, Mr. DeMille?
My new name is Miss Exposition, I guess.
There you go.
So basically this movie is about... Mae West character Marlo, who is this young, beautiful, everyone in the entire world is madly in love with her. The only twist is that it's played by Mae West when she's 80, so, you know.
80 going on 1,000.
Yeah, so
and
there's
you
that.
Said you said, Paul, she wrote this when she was younger?
Yes.
So this was supposed to be, like, her life back then.
Right.
Yeah. So, anyway, she... has just been a widow and is now looking for husband number 6, gets married, and they check into this fancy hotel for their wedding night and getting ready to go on their honeymoon. And the problem is, Marlo is so important to the world that she has to finish a few jobs before she can have her wedding night. One of the things she has to do is to seduce her ex-husband. I think he was like husband number 4 or number 2. I don't remember. But
it was 4.
4.
One of those. Anyway, and he's the Russian delegate to, I guess this
peace
was supposed
conference.
To be like the UN or something.
Right.
They never exactly specify, but it sort of seems like the UN. And anyway, they keep having a vote on something that sounds like a nuclear arms treaty or something like that. Basically, the entire fate of the planet hangs in the balance. No need to get too specific about it because it's really all about her being sexy.
Right, nothing important.
Right. Just whether the world's going to blow up in some unspecified fashion. And the only way to prevent this is to get the Russian delegate to actually show up to one of the meetings to vote. And I don't know why he doesn't want to show up, but basically he says, well, the only way you'll get me here is if you get me some time with my ex-wife. And, you know, because she's so amazing. So she basically goes and hangs out with him in his room for about 5 minutes, waves her magical vagina of world peace around, and then he's so delighted at having been in her presence that he shows up for the vote, and the world is saved.
So the world is saved.
I'm sorry, but every time you put the word vajayjay and Mae West together, I just start to get very ill. It's just skeezy and cringeworthy.
Yeah.
And there's this other stuff going on, you know, husband number latest 6 is Timothy Dalton, and there's a lot of comedy, quote unquote, regarding... is he gay? Is he not gay?
Well,
there's misunderstandings.
Because he doesn't realize, like, any time that they're mentioning, like, asking him questions, that they're basically even putting innuendos in there or whatever. And he doesn't get it, so he just kind of goes with it, you know, and everything, and just...
I think it's supposed to be him being British versus everybody else being American, and he says all these fancy-sounding British things that sound gay to them.
Yeah.
And,
right, because in England, an oar just means an oar, but in America, oh, my God.
It does?
I didn't get that oar.
I don't know. I hope I'm not offending anybody by asking what it is, because I don't
know. Do you know what it was, an oar?
You know, it's a big, long piece of wood to row the boat, and that's what Timothy Dalton is thinking, but... The guy who's interviewing me is like, oh, it's an oar.
Yeah, no, he goes, is it an oar or an oar? And I was like, what the fuck are
it's you? It's an extremely awkward, unfunny play on words that just falls flat. Yeah. Like most of the comedy in this film falls flat.
There's a few funny lines in it.
There's one or two lines.
What was the one at the end that actually made us laugh?
She's
like, I finally get to say the British are coming.
That didn't make me laugh. That made me cringe.
There was an actual funny line at some point.
Oh, that was George Hamilton when he was with his gun. He's like, I got to stick up the world. Stick up, world.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So he goes.
That was the best
line.
Yeah,
that was funny. He runs into the meeting of the UN. And he's like, oh, my God, I get to stick up the world. Stick it up, world. And they all raise their hands. And it's like,
that was silly.
Yeah, so that made me laugh. But that's pretty much the only joke that was, like, actually funny.
I know. So it's Mae West playing Marla, whatever her name is. And then there's Timothy Dalton, who's the husband number latest. DeLuise, who is her,
manager.
Manager. Yeah. He's actually pretty funny in this. He was
wonderful.
Yeah, he was
I
good.
Liked him a lot.
He was my favorite character, honestly.
Because, of course, we also forgot to mention this is a musical, so there's lots of horrible, horrible music going on. So he gets to sing and dance a little bit, which is actually kind of fun.
I don't think he danced as much
as he
sang.
He totally did. He tap danced.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he did. Oh,
with a cane and a little hat. Oh, my God. As you do. Like... There were
in 1930s musicals. Yeah. Sure. I mean, 1970s musicals.
And I wonder if it was a callback to when she was, like, young and hot and everything.
Sure. No, all of it.
Back when you had singing and dancing in movies, because that was entertaining to people in the 30s.
Right.
But in the 1977, when you have Star Wars and other things... Yeah, no.
No, musicals were kind of dying at that point.
The musical thing died in the 70s because there were a few really, really bad things that came out. Paint Your Wagon came out and nearly killed the musical.
Are you serious? You didn't like Paint Your Wagon?
Nobody likes Paint Your
Wagon. I love Paint Your
Wagon. People make fun of Paint Your
Wagon. Well, they can make fun of me then. I thought that musical was hilarious.
It is hilarious.
A woman with two husbands.
Awful movie.
Oh, Lee Marvin. Come on. I love anything that Lee Marvin was in. I don't care.
I know.
I'm not a Western guy, so I never watched it. But.
No. It's not a Western. It's a musical.
It's a musical.
it's really not a Western.
Yeah.
I liked all the signs where it would be like population one, population three, and then one of the signs said population men. Like clearly, oh my God, we need some women
ridiculous.
Here.
But anyway, the 70s were where the musicals came to die, and this one died a horrible death. But the 70s also were a time when the thing was to do a guest cameo in as many, you know, films as you could do. And actually, they did that in the 60s, too. Things like, you know, Around the World in 80 Days and, you know...
Casino Royale had, like,
yeah,
a lot of
there was,
stuff.
And like, so these people would pop in. So you had Alice Cooper popped in and Ringo Starr popped in because you're trying to get all the young kids who love rock and roll into this film.
Was Alice Cooper actually a famous musician already at this point?
I think so, yeah. He pretty much was.
Was he?
Keith Moon, and yeah, absolutely. Okay. 70s. And so you had all these sort of 70s icon rock and roll hipsters in this film, and it was to sort of bring the kids along. And all of their roles were like really small and strange. And
who did Keith Moon play?
Yes, wardrobe. Come on in, ladies. What the devil do you think you're doing? Pick that dress up.
Sorry, sir.
Marlo, you're looking even more magnificent than usual. Wait till you see what Roger has created for you.
He played the grotesque gay dress guy. Wild Silk!
It's 100% gold!
Yes.
He was a great guy.
Oh my God.
I was like, what, did he turn into a pirate?
All you have to do is say this is gold, and he went on for like five minutes for this
thing. Guarantee you that was all him. Like,
over
that's what it felt
top.
Like.
I like the part, though, when he's like feeling the guy's jacket, and he's like, oh, I can tell this is silk from wherever. It's awful. And then he walks away. And like, that was funny. Okay, there was another thing that...
I mean, there was a few actual scenes,
a few clever things
that actually. But see, most of the comedy came from like thinking that Mae West was beautiful and young and everything.
Young and beautiful, your looks will never be gone.
So like a lot of that comedy was her saying these lines where she's like making innuendos and sex jokes, and it's just. Really cringy. I heard Paul barf like a few times.
Not a few times. There are so many of them. Like,
yes.
If you could have just recorded us listening to this movie and, like, take the movie out, all you would hear for an hour and a half was...
Blarg. Oh, yeah. Or then me, you know, when Timothy Dalton is singing to her and saying, you are young and beautiful. I'm like, no, you're not. You're really, really not.
Yeah. You were when you wrote this.
Stop gaslighting
me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was another phrase that kept coming out, Paul saying that we were all being gaslit.
Yes, absolutely. It was ridiculous. And then, you know, some of the other comedy was things like you had the one guy who was hanging around in the elevator. He was the secret agent guy. So he has his secret agent sunglasses on.
Right.
And he's
hiding behind a newspaper.
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally.
That was fun.
But so he's trying ridiculous. So hard to hide in the elevator, but then he just waltzes into the UN meeting like he belongs there.
Right.
And it's like,
right.
And he's
okay.
Like whispering, you know.
It's just like, what was all the hiding in the elevator
right.
about then? If you can just waltz into the UN and there's no guards outside the door, really?
I know. Mm. But it's to your point, Jonathan, in regards to most of the humor coming from Mae West and what she's saying.
Always wanting something. And as for your manager, he really rubs me the wrong way.
Don't worry, honey. I'll rub you the right way.
You know, when she did her movies, that was kind of her thing. It was not just to be a sexpot, but to be a sexpot who would say these dirty little jokes, these little innuendo things, which, you know, when you're young and hot and sexy, you can get away with it. And she kind of made that sort of trope back in the day. But it's a very different thing to still be doing it when you're 80 years old.
Has her voice always been that like that?
Annoying? Yes.
Yes. I just found her voice to be just sort of grating.
No.
Well,
sure.
You know what, though? I've never even seen a Mae West movie.
Neither
have
I.
But I've heard so many people
You've
mimic
just seen
her.
Them. Yeah.
And that's exactly, she didn't sound any different.
Nope.
Did she? She just looked different because
she's
older.
That was her.
But she sounded exactly like
Mae
West. Like
that bounce you were talking about?
Yeah.
That bounce was her in every film.
Yeah, like she just, like every time she takes a step, she does a little bounce along with it.
And then she would touch her hair.
Stop touching your hair!
Oh, I'm so sexy. Oh.
Well, we have to preface this because this is a radio show that we were touching our hair as opposed to that one scene where the guy, like, gave the thumbs up
right.
on the phone!
Oh, yeah. Right.
He's like, well, how did it go?
Can you see my hand gestures over the phone?
No. Oh, my God.
And there were just so many groaners and points where I'm just, you know, cringing and going, blah. The other one, in addition to The British Are Coming, which everybody I've ever shown this to, that's like the biggest groaner. But the other one is when they're in the gym and she's like, oh, so much meat and no
potatoes.
Oh, God. Oh, the first time I heard that, I thought I was going to puke. It
Wait,
was so,
so
bad.
Is this me overthinking it, though? Or is she making a commentary on how they're all on steroids and have no testicles left?
It could be. I think there's other meat that she's thinking about, though.
I know, but she says all meat and no potatoes.
Yeah.
So that
potatoes would be the testicles.
Right. So I'm sure that it wasn't Spartan.
I'm trying not to think about any of this.
You brought it up.
I know. Well, I brought it for you guys so you could enjoy this wonderful, wonderful
film. No, so you brought
film.
Up the line. You brought up that line again. So
it's instead, I insist on overthinking it and trying to make it like have more substance than it has.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that.
It's okay. That's allowed at IFC because, you know, we don't, we want to give the directors and the producers and everybody a little bit more credit. But let's get into the cast a little bit because this is a star cast, right?
Sure. And this was a Paramount film. Now, she had to sort of get special funding for this because Paramount didn't want to make it. Nobody wanted to make this for a long time.
They were like,
for obvious reasons.
A little washed up now.
Right.
You know?
So like, I still don't know the story about how she finally managed to get this made. I don't know if she just pulled in some favors or she threatened to blackmail somebody over something. I don't know.
I don't know if we'll ever get that story necessarily.
Or maybe it's because she thought, you know, in her kind of, maybe she was a little out of it. And thought that this was going to be her making the movie the way she envisioned it back when she was young, and everybody else saw this as, oh my gosh, this is going to be a comedy, and she won't even realize it.
Or maybe the folks at Paramount said, okay, the way to salvage this film is to make this into a silly, over-the-top sex farce, and people will find it funny that there's this 80-year-old great-grandma doing all of this
stuff.
You know? Oh my God.
What did you just discover, Jonathan?
Arnold Schwarzenegger turned down Timothy Dalton's role.
Oh my God. How awesome would that have been? How awesome.
Speaking of meat and no potatoes.
I would kill to see him singing.
Oh my God.
You are young and beautiful. Contemplate this on the tree of woe.
Oh, be careful. He's right behind you.
Oh, yeah. He is.
Hello. Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Oh, my God.
That would be, that's like my fantasy come true. My goodness.
Wow.
If we ever get a chance to interview Mr. Schwarzenegger, I have to ask him about this.
Yeah. Awesome. If we ever get the chance
to. How
could you turn that down?
Oh.
Missed opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. But so, yeah. So, Mae West. Dom DeLuise probably had the biggest other role in there. George Hamilton was in there. He who is always professionally tanned. And then, let's see, gosh, there were...
Regis Philbin at the beginning was one of the reporters.
He was not Walter Cronkite. He was Waldo Cornwright.
There you go.
Of course he was.
Of course he was. Yeah.
Or Comwright. I'm sorry, Comwright.
Rona Barrett was in there. She was like a minor celebrity in the 70s. Rona Barrett. She was the muckraker.
Yes, yeah. Who made everyone think that... The one guy was gay.
Timothy Dalton's character was gay because doesn't mean the same thing.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous. And actually, it's funny because she does come out and just say, "Are you gay?" And he's like, "Oh, I'm happy, yes."
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. Really? Like in the 70s, people could not.
Come on.
That whole joke about gay versus not was more about British versus
it
American.
It was the disco era, for crying out loud.
No, it was just because he would say things that Americans didn't understand and they interpreted it the wrong way because he's British and they're making a big thing about him being British.
Oh, the whole thing was a big thing. An overly complicated, overly exaggerated, ridiculous, over-the-top thing. You know.
Who did Ringo Starr play?
He was the director with the beard. He was the director, Laszlo, something or other.
And one of her ex-husbands.
Of course.
I actually liked him.
Didn't he start with a Russian accent and then not finish the movie with a Russian accent?
It wouldn't surprise me. I think he was supposed to be Italian or Czechoslovakian.
Well, he had a very distinct accent at the beginning of the movie, the first time we saw him. When he checked into the hotel,
right.
He had one at first when he was doing the directing of the scene. Then I guess maybe he just got tired of it or something.
I thought it didn't sound the same.
Well, Ringo Starr is not known for his acting skills, so it's not surprising that he would start off with an accent and then it... Now, the thing is, I forget who the director is. I don't know
it was the director of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Oh, there you go. Another shitty movie.
I like Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and he also did some scenes for the Casino Royale and... I mean, the dude...
He's not like a big director. Ken Hughes.
He was doing stuff, you know, like he doesn't, his, he may not have been like a huge, well-known movie director, but he was constantly making movies every year.
Do you have that quote? Because it seems like, there was certainly some friction going on between him and Mae West, because they probably had very, very different ideas about how this movie should be done.
Yeah.
And I have this feeling like, he was called in to direct... but didn't have any, like, casting, you know, things. Because, you know, a lot of Hollywood films, the director... actually, usually the director is the one who casts everybody, mm-hmm. right, in Hollywood. But I bet when this is a produced movie, like it was with, you know, Mae West wanted this to be her movie and everything. And he probably was not too keen on the fact sure. that she had to play it at the age that she was playing it or whatever. Probably wanted to cast somebody much younger than it could actually hear.
Right,
because
that would have helped.
You know,
because yeah, her hearing was gone, her stability was gone. She couldn't walk very fast.
Yeah.
You could tell that she was trouble moving.
She moved so slowly throughout and you could almost kind of ignore it when she was on the screen by herself. But then they would cut to another scene, and you'd see how fast everybody else was moving, and you're like, oh my God, whoa.
Especially if she was involved in a dance scene, and everybody else is dancing, even if it's not very good.
And she's just kind of swaying back and forth a little bit, but just like...
Like she can't stand up
without...
You warned us about that, by the way.
I did.
Yeah, you did. You said she was gonna sing... And not dance very well, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, and I think then the analogy we came up with was it was like a Weekend at Bernie's situation before Weekend at Bernie's existed.
Right. Where she died 3 weeks before the production.
And they went ahead with it anyway because they had everybody lined up, you know.
It's such a shame.
Which is funny because we hadn't even seen Mae West at that point when you said that.
Right.
So it's really funny that all of a sudden that was really...
But the thing is, I mean, she insisted on being in the song and dance things. I mean... Okay, fine, you want to make your movie, but let's go through the fun and farce, ha ha ha, old lady still sexy, blah 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 blah. But don't put yourself through the torment of having to have to dance and memorize singing and do this other stuff. Come on, you are definitely past it. I mean, maybe her singing voice wasn't so bad, I guess, but you know, you're 80 years old, give yourself a break, for goodness sakes. You can
mm-hmm.
sit down and do things.
And I think we should probably mention too, we were talking about this during the first podcast that we started recording that died on the vine, but we were talking about how 80 back then is not 80 now.
No.
So like if anybody's listening to this podcast and is 80 and is like, hey, I could still dance.
She was a rough 80.
No, it was like we were talking about how in the 70s, if you were 80 in the 70s, well, congratulations that you made it that far, and you'd spent your entire life like binge drinking and smoking and I don't know, eating red meat and no vegetables, and that's...
All of the cocaines.
Yeah, I mean, so she was a rough 80, because
mm-hmm.
I know people right now that are in their 90s that are in better shape than
yeah.
she seemed to be.
She was 80 going on 1,000.
Yeah,
It was crusty. It was very,
so no
very
hate
crusty.
To our older listeners out there, because, man, she was, yeah, 80
Yeah,
going
and
on
in
a
the
thousand.
Production, it was famous for she needed all kinds of extra help. She couldn't really remember her lines. She couldn't remember where to stand. They had to guide her. You know, they had to prompt her in a lot of things.
There were a whole lot of scenes of her just laying in bed.
There's
yeah. I never thought about that.
Yeah,
was.
She's propped up on pillows.
There was
a
one
lot.
Story I remember where she goes into an elevator. There's a scene where she goes into the elevator, and she doesn't remember how to get out, and so she's stuck in there for like 20 minutes, and people forget that she's in there. And then finally her minder had to go, and where is she? And they're like, we don't know.
And then
they found
hear
her in there.
In
yeah.
the distance, hey, come up
so, yeah.
and
it's,
from the elevator.
It's funny, but it's sad at the yeah. same time, because it's like, Mae, you had this, your golden time. You should have shot this with somebody else and then just sort of been the executive producer saying, this is how I want it to be. This is how
I completely disagree, because you know what? The writing of it wasn't that strong to begin with. This
well,
never would
true.
Have been a great movie. You got to
no,
admit,
no,
like the
no.
magical world peace vagina is not a good premise for a movie. Okay, except I guess I don't know
hey.
who's done this before. Well, oh, Lysistrata maybe. I don't know, but other than that, come on now.
Well, if you're going to have a world peace vagina, it ain't going to be that one.
Right. So I think that this is a far better movie having her in it than having anybody else in it. Because
Please.
at least we get to laugh at it. Otherwise, it would have been totally serious.
I know.
It's not good enough to be serious.
Please, can we make a movie called World Peace Vagina? Please. That'd be awesome. How would you not want to watch that?
Well, no.
It's like, but it's already been done. Lysistrata did it, and then in ancient Greece, by the way, and then it's like the reverse Helen of Troy.
There you
yeah.
go.
Right.
Yeah, a face that sunk 1,000 ships.
Yeah. yep.
So here's
if you just play it backwards, it's this movie.
Here's the story that I got from IMDb, and so this will kind of explain how the production was a little bit. So this is somebody, I guess it's Skato345. I don't know if that's his last name or whatnot, but he writes.
Everybody on the internet uses a real name.
Absolutely. And tells the truth.
Yeah. And tells the truth.
Okay. So this is totally 100% true.
You bet.
Okay.
From this guy's perspective, I don't know. Maybe. There are only a few, very few moments of absolute awe in which I can recall my life. What is not reflected in the blurb about the film and comments referring to Mae West's embarrassing appearance in this film is the effect that she had on the cast and crew when she entered the set on the Paramount lot. We were in the quote-unquote gym waiting to begin shooting, talking and yapping away as actors do will do at 7 a.m. before anything gets going. When the double doors to the set opened and each person turned and looked at the lady entering and realized it was Mae West, they fell silent until you could have heard a pin drop or your heart beating just a bit faster and louder. Miss West may have been a poor shadow of what she had been years before, but she was still Mae West. Incredible as it may seem, as 80 years old, she radiated a presence I have felt from very few others. Later on, while shooting a scene with her, and the director was loudly yelling at her through her earpiece, rather than becoming angry at the rude treatment she was getting, she simply turned to me with that Mae West smile, and in one look, she said, "It's okay, kid, I'm Mae West. Who the hell gives a damn about him?" When I looked back at her, somewhat in awe, she winked. Ultimately, she did the take the way she wanted to do it. Maybe the public will never see that scene as I saw it played out, but I'll never forget it. I mean, that's sweet. And I mean, like, I feel like that's got to be pretty true to what probably happened. And I'm guessing that the director was sort of, you know, hard on her because, you know, he probably wasn't happy directing this film.
Sure. He was probably instructed by Paramount to do this.
Yeah, he was probably in a contract with Paramount to direct this film, and he wasn't, you know, happy. But he directed the film. It was not, I mean, I thought it was directed competently, you know.
It wasn't as full of continuity errors as some other things you all have reviewed.
If anything, I would say that it was over-directed. There was way too much and too many things, too many flourishes, you know.
There was a few continuity errors.
Yes, there were.
A few. And one in particular I noticed, and I pointed, looked over at Paul and said something, and he was sitting, and then he was standing, and then he was sitting again kind of thing, where it just looked a little awkward, like... So I didn't like that scene, but aside from that,
at least the seasons didn't change in the middle of the movie.
Yeah, we didn't say that there's snow and there's no snow on the ground.
Looking at you, Blood Predator. Discussion.
Yeah, no, but I mean, on the other hand, gaslighting. You're young and beautiful. No, you're not.
Well, I mean, somebody thinks she's beautiful. Jeez. Paul, maybe not you. But
That's a matter of opinion. Young, right? No, that's not
okay,
a matter
well,
of opinion.
Okay, well, young, okay. But you're beautiful, geez, man. That's somebody's grandma.
Great-grandma. Not so great-grandma.
Well, I'll say if I'm 80 years old and get the chance to make a movie where the entire cast is instructed to worship me, tell me I'm beautiful and awesome, and that the entire world, you know, hinges in the balance based on what I do, I'm going to make that movie. I don't care how ridiculous it is. I'm 80 years old. I would like something like
you're
that.
You're 80 and your magical vajayjay is going to save the planet.
And I'm going out, you know, on a high note. Come on.
I never expected to hear magical vajayjay in my life. It's a magical day.
There you go.
It's a Mozart opera.
Welcome to Indie Film Cafe, where we do all kinds of movies.
Every body part can become magical in the right circumstances.
There you go.
Sounds like a Mae West line right there.
Yeah. So, and then we all say,
going on to that theme of bleh.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the songs. Ooh. The songs and dance things. Now, I despise most musicals because they're so corny and so terrible. But what did you guys think of the song and the dance bits.
Well, first of all, I love musicals, so after this, we're meeting in the parking lot to settle this. But
fight me.
I don't like every musical, but I like a lot of musicals, even some of the really corny ones. That being said, there was nothing like really redeeming about any of these songs, you know, that they weren't catchy enough. Like, I can't whistle any of them. I can't hear any of them in my head right now.
I can't even remember any of them.
Well, the probably the biggest and most famous one is when she and Timothy Dalton cover Captain and Tennille's Love Will Keep Us Together in a very awkward, weird band.
Oh, is that what that was supposed to be? I didn't even recognize it.
I know.
Oh, okay.
Yes, that was Captain and Tennille butchered. If you could already butcher something, it was
not the one where he's singing to her in the room in the beginning?
Yes.
I just remember all she could go is, stop. Oh. And that's all she said for the whole musical.
Some sweet talking guy comes along, singing his song. Don't mess around, you gotta be strong.
Stop.
But I really love you.
Stop.
I'll be thinking of you. Look in my heart and let love keep us together.
Whatever.
She said, but then you got off a really good line on that, because she kept like pushing her fiance out of the way so she could look at herself in the mirror. And you were like, oh my God, she's on her honeymoon with herself. Yeah,
pretty much. She just kept like doing. And then
narcissism.
Every time, but I think I said that before she even pushed him out of the way.
Yeah.
And then he pushed it. I was like, Jesus.
Yep,
because let's face it, there was going to be Grandma's JJ, magical JJ sex, whether Timothy Dalton's going to be there or not.
Right, exactly.
Ew.
But, you know,
he did try to fall asleep to get out of it.
That's true. Oh, I would have jumped out the freaking building.
Well, he actually kind of did that too. At
one point, he did jump out of the building.
Yeah.
But he also did marry her. And, like, he was a British. I mean, where the fuck did he meet this chick? Like, how did this end up happening?
I know. Why? Why was this even happening?
Because he had some kind of title. Like, he was like Lord
he was
Barrington
Sir,
or something.
Sir.
Right. They were trying to draw this parallel with, like, the big giant British monarchy wedding. You know, this would be such a big grand deal. And this is supposed to be equally, if not more, important.
And then we find
ridiculous.
Out that he was actually a secret agent.
Yeah.
And he was bigger than James Bond.
That
007,
was, that was fun.
Which is funny because,
ironic,
guess what? 10 years later, he would be Bond. Mm. 10 years. So it took 10 years after this of them going, maybe he could be Bond. Oh, he's got away from that Wade West movie. It's okay.
Or
we'll
maybe it would be
him.
A good joke to put him in, and somebody would be it was like an early example of an Easter egg.
Timothy Dalton is an excellent actor. He's well known for being a really good professional actor. So
yeah, he wasn't bad.
No, he was great.
The fact that he was able to overcome this albatross is just amazing. And, if you've seen him in the Bond movies, you've seen him, like, you know, my favorite was The Lion in Winter, like I said earlier. I also loved him in the British TV show Penny Dreadful. I don't know if you ever saw that.
He's in Penny Dreadful. What did he play?
He's the older guy with the goatee.
No kidding.
Yeah, he's
really
good.
I like him.
Very
Penny
dark
Dreadful.
And
there you go. Once
dark
you see
and
it
intense.
Again, you'll now notice him.
But it was really, really well done. And you have to wonder if, the producers, the James Broccoli and all of the Bond producers said, okay, if you can convince us of that, you can convince us of anything.
Yeah.
You're definitely Bond.
You know? There's a danger that not even James Bond could overcome.
Mae West.
Oh, Lord. But, yeah, for the most part, other than that one famous song, you know, they sprinkle out stuff. But I remember there were several times you're like, oh, my God, we have to hear another damn song.
Yeah.
But they weren't that long. I mean,
or you kept saying, oh, I forgot this was a musical.
Yeah. I kept trying to forget it.
I know. Yeah, the songs were pretty awful.
But, no, they weren't that long, though. I mean, they weren't like 4-minute songs that seemed to go on and on forever. They were pretty quick. And the problem with them was they just weren't. Like she said, they weren't catchy enough. So
yeah, one at the beginning that was all about like Hollywood is so awesome. All I can hear is that "Hooray for Hollywood" song in my head.
Right.
That's not the song they were singing, but that's what I'm hearing.
But that's what they were aping.
Yes, they were. But I can't even hear what the actual song was. because it was so, like, forgettable.
Well, and then musically, they were all boring and terrible, and they all kind of hinged on her with her smutty little double entendre kind of sayings,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's...
except for that one. She didn't say anything. She hadn't said anything in the movie
for that
yet. And that one was still bad, so...
And then the one that Dom DeLuise got to sing and dance.
I liked that.
I liked
that
his dancing, because he's adorable when he tap dances.
If you're a big Dom DeLuise fan, and let's face it, I mean, you know, kind of in the 70s, he really wasn't that big of a deal, but... He does give a pretty good performance in here, and he's probably the best thing in the film, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, he became big deal when he worked with, like,
Mel Brooks
and stuff, but, like, he was sort of a...
What else did he do with Mel Brooks? Because all I can think of is when he's old in Robin Hood, Men in Tights, and that's
I think he was in, like,
High Anxiety. He was in a few things.
Okay.
I don't remember exactly.
Or Silent Movie.
Silent Movie, one of those things.
Like, yeah, those things. Which are, like, older, like... I want to say 80s, like early 80s.
Yeah, he was
movies.
A comedian. Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
But he did pretty good here, and, you know, seeing him sing and dance, okay. He gave it his all. He really tried, and I thought he did okay.
And his facial expressions are priceless. I loved him.
I mean, he was just.
Yeah.
And I swear to God, he was also the chef in the movie.
He looked like that guy. He kind of looked like the chef.
He kind of looked like the chef, but it was a different guy.
look like him to me, whatever.
It's like, hey, watch me, I'm pulling a
but
Peter Sellers.
He seemed to sort of give the attitude of, well, this is a bunch of crap, but I don't care. I'm just going to have fun anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so you got to like that.
Yeah. No, he was wonderful. I mean, and I got mad at you at first because you were like, when you saw him, oh, man, I forgot Dom DeLuise was in this movie. And I'm like... I like Dom DeLuise.
Yeah, me too.
Like, jeez, why are you always gotta be all like down on everything I love? God.
I didn't know that you were such a gigantic fan of Dom DeLuise.
I'm not, but I'm a fan. Like, I enjoy his stuff,
you
know?
You like everybody.
I do. If they're funny or if they're entertaining, I will like them, you know? And I hadn't seen Mae West. I knew of Mae West, especially... because I do a lot of research on, like, Ed Wood and the stuff that he had done, and he grew up in that time period, like, adoring Mae West. I think he met her or knew her or whatever back then, which
I'm
made
sure
me...
I'm sure he would have begged her to be in one of his movies.
I'm surprised she wasn't in one
of
his movies.
I know, now. Too much ego there. She would not have...
She was too good back then, yeah.
Yeah.
She would not have...
Well, I mean,
so
she
well.
Worked for Paramount. Come on now.
So exactly. After watching this, are you now, like, at all interested in watching a Mae West movie from when she was young just to, like, compare?
Maybe at some point,
I think I am going to now because I've always known, like, not always, but, you know, for a long time, known who she was just because people, like... there's so many make jokes and stuff and reference
her
all the time.
And it's a good thing because you go back into the 30s and see her stuff and you get to see what she really was. And she was a big star back then. I mean, she was a force of nature back then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of those tropes like Betty Boop, that whole thing, that was all, I'm pretty sure Betty Boop was based on Mae West. I mean, don't strike me, you know, for, you know, if it's not 100% true, but I think that's what that was. Mm-hmm. And,
I wouldn't be surprised.
She, you know, said a lot of the tropes, the Hollywood tropes, that we come to take for granted today.
You're right, because Betty Boop did have a lot of those, like, little innuendos as a cartoon.
Exaggerations and stuff, right.
You know, and a lot of it was sexual when you really look back at it. You know, when you're a kid, you don't realize any of that stuff or whatever.
And let's not forget, too, that early, the golden age of Hollywood, you know, that's how the actors were. They were a lot more... how we would consider cartoonish. Because remember, a lot of them made their bones in the silent films, and so they didn't have talkies, they didn't have dialogue
mm-hmm.
that you could hear, so everything had to be exaggerated. So you have, you know, Mae West and James Cagney and some of these other people, that they over-exaggerate, they overact, you would say, these days, because that's the way that they learned, and that's how a lot of those movies in the 20s and 30s were.
Now, she certainly didn't do that in this movie because she could barely move at all.
That's true.
I love how she had all her husbands being like big time actors like Timothy Dalton, Tony Curtis, Ringo Starr, George Hamilton. You know, all of them were like big people who are big celebrities that people know. Like, you were telling me when we first were going to watch this movie that you were like, oh, you know, you go, oh, Timothy Dalton's in this movie. I'm like, oh, Timothy Dalton's in the movie, all right. Then you're like, oh, Ringo Starr. I'm like, Ringo Starr, what? And then you're like, you know, oh, yeah, George Hamilton's in this too. And I'm like, fuck, man. Like, and this is a bad movie? Like,
how? Well, there's got to be some other examples of movies that have a star-studded cast terrible.
Oh, yes. He's got a whole slew of them. The Hollywood knockbusters.
Well, no, I mean, don't knock mine. That's right. I like those movies. So, no, they're not.
I like this movie.
You like it in a different way than I like those.
Oh,
but no. But no, no, Hollywood Knockbusters is more of movies that didn't do well in the box office, but I still think are pretty decent movies. So it's a little bit different than this. This, I think, is not a decent movie at all. Like, this isn't. This has its. It tried, you know. I can give it credit for that, though. Like, it really tried to be a good movie.
I mean, you looked like you were getting pretty bored there for a while.
Yeah, a little bit. I was kind of, I think I did tell you at one point, like, how much longer does this movie have?
Several times.
So I was kind of like going, okay, like, because there was a couple slow points where I was just like, I was just like, can we
basically when she was getting from one room to the other.
Although,
one of my favorite
parts is, you know, when the guy in the elevator is talking about, oh, it depends. And we're like, oh, depends.
Depends. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh my God. Really, that was an old joke if you didn't catch.
Oh my goodness. It had its moments where
we had to manufacture a lot of moments.
Yeah.
I mean, it had moments though. Like,
sure.
Please.
Sure.
I mean, I can't at all like say this is a beyond terrible. We watched earlier a way worse movie than this.
Yeah. With a lot more continuity problems.
Sure.
Yeah. So this isn't, you know, you know what, I was kind of worried because, you know, you were saying, oh my God, this is. And you've been talking about this movie since season one.
Oh, I've been wanting to show it.
Yeah.
Just Jen, I wanted to show this to her. I was dying to see what her reaction to this was.
We'll do a Patreon only with her at some point.
That'd be fun.
You know, but...
because I know she knows who Mae West is.
Right. And this is a cute movie. Like, it's not, you know, it's not great or anything near that, but it's... It's not so bad. It's like, oh my God! But it's like
it's kind of cute. It's not unprofessional. The people who produced it and did all of that, the production end, knew what they were doing. It's just that there's really no conflict at all. You know,
except for, you know, nuclear annihilation.
Right.
But I mean, besides that, there's no.
But
conflict.
It's all manufactured. You know, our love for her is manufactured.
Yeah.
Sort of everything is.
Even the nuclear.
Contrived.
The thing is like literally all she had to do was sit in the fucking room with him.
Yeah.
And eat cake until she realized there was a cassette tape and think, oh, you should eat that. And then he's like, oh, you're right. I shouldn't eat it. I should just throw it out. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, created a diabetic.
And then
dog,
you got worried about the dog. And the dog should be like, oh no, not the dog.
No, bad things better not happen to that dog.
So, you know, though, at the very beginning of the movie, they even introduce, like, the whole nuclear holocaust thing as an aside.
Right.
You know, it's like, really, the big story of the day is this wedding, but also in this hotel going on right now is a UN meeting where they're deciding the fate of the world. But back to the wedding!
Right, and then not only that, they show a shot inside of the secret meeting room. Not so secret, because you can see inside of it. But what are all the delegates doing? They're all rushing to the window saying,
oh, look, there's Marlo.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. Because clearly she's far more important than anything else in the whole world.
World peace, who cares? You know,
it's so ridiculous.
Which really is a good... like analogy on how people feel during the the 70s, even to today, is like people would rather fawn over like the Kardashians or whatever, whoever the person is that's like big this
royal right family now.
Yeah, royal family, than they would actually trying to figure out world peace. Which that's just I'm trying not to be like a pessimist, but that's just never going to happen. There's always going to be somebody who's going to disagree with you on something. And
well, yeah, and even in the 30s during the Depression, the movies that did well in the theaters were all about rich people having wonderful lives and dancing their wonderful dances because nobody wanted to be reminded that they were poor and starving, you know?
Right.
So I think there's a little bit of human nature in there, but at least this movie is just kind of, like, making fun of it, because it was so obvious the guy's, like, you know, he gets real serious for a minute talking about the grave decisions that are being made in this room. But back to the wedding, you know, it's, like, so obviously, like, making fun and of that, that that is the way we are as
that
humans.
Is that we care more about somebody getting married than we do, like, the fate of the world.
Right.
And which, I mean, today's world actually is sort of a little bit different. Because today, even, there are still people who care about that. But there's people still fighting, trying to figure out how we can, you know, make peace, you know, with everybody. But it can't happen if everybody's fighting all the time, you know, and arguing.
Well, what they need is a magical
hoo-ha. Yeah, magical vajayjay of Mae West.
Where's Mae West when you need her?
6 feet under, unfortunately. But,
Bernie's five.
You know, the other thing is, you know, a lot of the humor was also based on sort of broad stereotypes.
Who you call it broad?
Yeah, broad stereotypes, cultural stereotypes, you know,
sexual orientation stereotypes.
Yeah, stuff that's not going to really fly. The guy who was doing a broad, awful imitation of Jimmy Carter.
Oh god,
that was so bad.
The guy was literally like smiling so much that his face looked like it was going to pop.
Cartoon.
And then he was eating a plate of peanuts.
A bowl of peanuts.
My god.
And then he said it was all this place was nutty or something. You know, like, I'm like, see, that's the problem with this movie. It's too on the nose jokes, you know, like there is no subtlety in this movie at all. Like everything is so on the nose, and I feel like that hinders the comedy a lot, because like all of a sudden I'm like, okay, I got it before you even got to say the line.
Sure.
You know, and that, like, I think that's a poor comedy.
And comedy is hard. It really is tough to. It's all about timing, in addition to, you know, subtle and clever writing. And, you know, it's not easy to do. And
how much do you think it depends on the time period, too? Like the audience? It depends. But I don't know, because I have, you know, like, if you read some of, like, the ancient Greek plays, comedies and stuff, none of those things make me laugh, really.
Right.
Yeah.
Some of it, you know,
some
time
of it
period
might
dependent.
Have been 70s humor and stuff, especially, like, we're going back to some of the stereotypical stuff with the, you know, people being gay, the over-the-top, you know, was it Keith Moon playing the over-the-top gay, you know, costumer,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and everything.
Wild silk.
Oh,
wild
beautiful.
Silk. Wild
beautiful.
Silk.
I mean, he was... That stuff at that time was what people probably thought was funny. Nowadays, we just look at that and go, that's just fucking weird.
Yeah.
You know,
plus, the movie is trying to please two completely different sets of people. You know, the kids today that they were trying to please by bringing in all the rock stars to be, you know, the little cameos in there to get them interested, are not going to know who Mae West is. They're not going to sit around for these awful musicals. They like rock and roll and Star Wars. They're not going to listen to this and watch these people sort of, you know, prune around and with their little umbrellas and twirling about and, you know, hooray Hollywood. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
That's just bad.
But they did have Alice Cooper playing a song on a piano. I thought that was kind of cool.
There's an earlier movie.
I don't know when he was popular, but I can't imagine. I don't know. He looked so young.
There's an earlier movie I want to do for IFC that I want to show you guys at some point called Skidoo. And it was done in the 60s, and it's an Otto Preminger movie, and it's the same kind of a thing where he's trying to appeal to today's youth by having these older stars like Jackie Gleason doing all of this shit that would have been funny 30 years ago, but does not work at all to the drive-in crowd of the late 60s. And it's just, you know, it clangs like an out-of-tune bell, you know?
Well, yeah.
So I have to I'll have to show that to you sometime. It's a bad movie.
I guess Alice Cooper is older than I thought he was.
Yes, he's an old guy.
He's 73 right now, so...
Sure. Yes, we are still recording.
Okay. It was that, and I was also seeing what, how much before we were wrapping it up. Because
we got a few more minutes.
But I know I've been really enjoying this conversation. Oh, sure. Yeah. I just don't want to get lost in it.
No. But so we talked about the cast. We talked about the acting. We thought that mostly the acting was decent enough, except for
Mae West.
Well,
Mae West was still good.
A couple over the top. Performances that were just, I didn't really care for George Hamilton's bit, It was pretty wooden, if you ask me. I don't think his heart was into it, although his suntan probably was.
You say, wait, George Hamilton? Yeah. Wasn't it? I thought he was.
You thought he was?
As the mobster?
Yeah, I thought he had a fun time. He had that fucking elegant jacket on.
Elegance?
He looked like a fucking 30s gangster, and he was like...
He looked like he walked right out of Guys and Dolls.
And then when he was up on the rooftop with
Dom DeLuise,
he was having it looked like he was having a blast with him.
Blackmailing him
while
he's hanging him over the edge.
He was like, he was about to drop him if he said
now
he
that would have been
anything.
Funny
well yeah, maybe not to Dom but I thought he did a pretty decent job, and I thought he did he was enjoying it. The problem with it was a thing that came in like toward the last end of the second act, and we didn't even know about this character at all. We never heard about him. We didn't know anything about him. All of a sudden, this is who's coming in. It was like, it felt like a lot of these movies or a lot of these scenes were kind of like skits, and all of a sudden all these boyfriends were skits. Almost like a video game. You had to beat the final boss. Go up to the final boss and you get the, or whatever. So like it felt like different
West
things.
Mae West, the final monster.
Mae West in bed is the final monster.
The British are coming. It's going to haunt my dreams forever.
Oh my goodness. Well, see, there you go. But I think, I honestly thought George Hamilton did a good job. Given what he was given, because he wasn't given much, to work with. I blame the screenwriter who, I forgot his name now. His name is Herbert Baker, and he was the one who took over, basically, I guess, took her play and turned it into...
Expanded into a screenplay.
And I only blame him because I'm pretty sure a lot of the... so all the really bad jokes that Mae West said... Those seem to be her, probably.
Sure.
They
would have worked for vaudeville way back in the day, but,
right?
70s.
Yeah, people had heard all that kind of stuff. It wasn't like shocking coming from her.
Not in the '70s. Yeah. Now, back if she had done this back in the '40s or thirties or something, that was.
Yeah, she did. That was it. That's how she made her bones, these kinds of roles.
I think it would be even funnier if she had done it when she was young, because having six wives when you're like 30, that would be hilarious. Six husbands. Six husbands, whatever. But
maybe she had six wives, too.
Yeah, I mean,
apparently, she was supposed to film this particular film, and I wish I had come a little more prepared for this, but I remember reading that I thought she was supposed to film something with W.C. Fields. And W.C. Fields hated Mae West. Those two did not get along for whatever reason.
Then why would she have been working with them?
Because back then, they were under contract, and your contract said, if you're going to be in this film and we're going to put this in, that's what you're going to do. But apparently neither one of them wanted to work with each other for whatever reason. I'm thinking it's because both of them had much, much larger than life egos, and they just could not coexist. But I don't remember if they actually made the movie or if they did another thing. But those two would have been you don't see an orca on a great white shark in the same patch of ocean, because they're two top of the level predators and they avoid each other. You know, it's kind of sort of like that. Two apex predators. But that would have been a very interesting thing. And so, kind of going back to your idea that it had been Arnold Schwarzenegger playing the Timothy Dalton role, how freaking fascinating would that have been?
That would have been fascinating. I would have. He wasn't in the 70s. He wasn't that big of a star, though.
But he was big.
And he would have fit in really well with the gymnasts or whatever.
But his accent was far worse in the 70s. I'll have to show you Hercules in New York someday. It's
was that in the 70s?
Yes.
Okay, so he was sort of getting there. Because I don't think he became popular till the first Terminator, you know, right? Which I believe was like 80
Conan the Barbarian?
Conan the Barbarian
was before? Absolutely. Okay. And before that, the pumping iron thing made him famous in the late 70s.
Okay.
But yeah, he wasn't a star. He wasn't like the mega star until Terminator sort of did that for him. But that would have been quite interesting. I don't think Mae West ever became quite that kind of a mega star, but she was a star at a time when there weren't a whole lot.
Yeah.
And here's another thing that interests me as well. You notice there really weren't any other female roles in this. It was basically her.
Oh, she didn't want competition.
Exactly.
Oh, there was the one reporter.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't even... Oh, no. We hardly even saw her live. I guess we did see her live part one scene.
Yeah.
But the first scene, it was just through the television
screen.
Exactly.
So that's what I'm saying as far as just the way everything was around her ego and everything. It's all about her, and there cannot be any competition.
Like, there weren't even women in the room.
Nope.
Like, it was all, like, that first big dance scene. I don't think there was another woman
in
the
room. There are no other women in the universe except her.
Oh, my.
Yeek.
That's
so
amazing.
Yeah. So this was a very interesting film. Usually, I mean, we do a lot of horror movies, a lot of sci-fi movies, a lot of other movies. We don't do a whole lot of...
This was a horror movie.
Well, exactly. We don't do a whole lot of, I guess, musical comedies. Musicals are really
hard. I don't think we've done a musical, have we?
Not really, no.
No,
we've
never.
Tough.
I think this is the first musical. Wow, you.
I mean, we've had some movies that have some musical bits in it. You know, Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter.
Oh, that's
a couple
true.
Of musical numbers
counts.
In it, but it's not really a musical.
That's
musical.
A musical. Like,
there's only two songs.
I thought there was more.
No, there's only two.
Oh,
but
well,
there's a lot
trying,
more in this one.
But I guess they didn't have the.
There's a lot more in this one, but so. This was kind of like a little bit of a pioneering thing for me, and I've been wanting to do it because I have been wanting to sort of expand our palette into other kinds of, you know, stinky movies that are out there because there's so many. But I'm glad we finally got a chance to review this one. And now we've gotten to the point where we can talk a little bit about how we're going to rate this film.
Ooh, all right, fun.
So just to explain, we rate our films based on the stinkometer, which is a 1 to 10 score, and then we take three of the ones and then we add them together. Basically, the lower the score, the better the film is. So the more stink the movie you think the movie has, the higher the number. So if you don't think it's a stinky movie at all, and it's a good movie, you give it a 1. You think it's kind of in between some stink, but not really horrible, you give it a 5. And if you think it's a big old steaming cow pie of stink, you give it a 10.
Or any numbers between that. Plus, we do 0.5 as
right.
well. So.
If you want to be subtle and give a half step, feel free to do that. So, given that, I guess we could rate our film. So usually we like to get our guests go first.
Because I have no idea what kind of curve you grade on.
Right, and so I was going to suggest if you would prefer, perhaps we could go first, if you would like.
I think that sounds good.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and give this an 8.5. This was pretty damn stinky, in my opinion. We have definitely seen worse. Definitely seen worse.
Yeah.
But this is pretty bad, and this is one of the more cringe-worthy movies that I have ever shown. This isn't quite up to the Bat Pussy kinds of cringe-worthy, but it's close. It's very, very close. And I think I would love to see what Rebecca Reinhardt has. She's my co-host on Sexploitation Sleazecast. I'd love to hear what she has to say about this. I think she'd have a ball with this one. But 8.5 for me. It's bad. It's pretty awful, but I have seen worse.
Oh, yeah. See, I was wavering on between 7 and 8 before because I couldn't decide because it's out of all the movies that we've done, you know, this movie is by far the most like the production is very well done.
Mm-hmm.
The jokes are sort of funny at times, you know, like. I mean, there might be cringe ones that would go bleh to you. But aside from that, there's, you know, it's fun and it's entertaining. And Mae West is just, I mean, she's just Mae West. Like, she's just, she knows who she is. She's confident about, you know.
And she ain't changing it.
And she ain't changing it, you know, and I like that. So I'm going to go 7.5
okay.
for this.
All right. So I'm glad you guys went first because I was going to give it a 9. But,
oh,
you know,
my
here's
goodness.
The thing. Is that I haven't watched as many of these terrible movies as you, so I don't have as good of a frame of reference, I think, of how bad things really can be. Although we did just watch before this one, what was it called?
Blood Predators.
Blood Predators, yeah. And so when I compare it to that and think of the fact that that was made in 2007, where we have a lot more technology and things, and, you know, it seems like you should be able to avoid a lot of mistakes.
40 years.
There was just so much that was so bad continuity-wise, and just acting. The acting was so god-awful. and so I look back at this, and I'm like, okay, well, the acting really wasn't that terrible, except maybe the one really over the top, you know, the gay stereotype guy was pretty horrible.
I liked him, though. Like, he was terrible, but I liked him.
I mean, when he did the pirate thing, I kind of laughed because it was out of context.
And when he said he told the guy he was wearing a horrible suit.
Right. The horrible suit. That was funny. That was actually well done. Okay. All right, so I take it back. I think most of these people actually did some decent acting, better than I could ever do, I'm sure. So, yeah, I think I'll go back and give it an 8 instead of a 9. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 7.5, 8, and 8.5. Perfect.
Okay,
that's
sounds
kind of
good.
A row, you know, there.
That sounds good. So, Joe, what did you think of your first IFC experience?
I'm traumatized, and I don't know if I can sleep tonight, and I might need to go home and watch The Godfather or Parasite or something to cleanse the palate, you know?
Perfect.
You say Godfather, because that's obviously what they were going with on this movie.
There were some reference. Well, that's why it was in my head, but I was like trying to think of really
a better
good
movie.
Films.
Yeah, there you go. That's what we strive to do, is to take our friends and take them out of that really, really great sort of view of the world and movies and bring them all the way down into the stinky trash where we are.
You know, it really is. I think you could apply for a government grant for this. It's like a public service you're doing, because by showing people how bad it could be, you make them feel better about their lives. So.
Thank you. We appreciate this.
Sextet changes the world and more than just
more
with their
magical
vajayjay.
Some kind of community engagement grant for sure.
That's right.
Yeah.
Joe, do you think you'll be back? Do you think we scared you off?
No, I think I might be back. We'll see. Yeah.
I think, honestly, this was the better movie to show somebody who's never seen these movies before. Because, like, Blood Predator was pretty hard to watch for you.
You know what?
You know?
No, I actually had way more fun with Blood Predator because it was easier to make fun of. Because,
very riffable.
Like, this one wasn't as riffable because the same bad joke happened over and over. And all of her little, you know, innuendo lines were all very similar.
Right.
And so it's like there are only so many jokes you could make.
And there's only so many times you can go, blah!
And we did it more times than I thought possible. So, no, I actually had a lot more fun with the first one, because when something is so bad that it hurts, it's funnier. It's just, it's funnier.
There
you
go.
This one just made me kind of sad, you know? But,
no, a little bit.
Yeah, but no, I think that bring on the worst
ones. But did it live up to your ideas? Because remember, we kind of had a little bit of a discussion about you were wondering, you know, what is this about? Why are you doing this?
Right.
So does this give you a clearer idea of what we're doing and why?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah, he actually told me about that you guys actually had a discussion, because the question you had is, like, why do you want to watch bad movies?
Yeah.
You know, why wouldn't you want to watch better movies?
Well, because I already felt like, you know, Mystery Science Theater filled a niche in that respect. And I was like, well, what could we possibly add to that? You know? And I don't know.
Well, they go at a certain level and we go below it.
Our tagline used to be, we do the movies that Riff Trax doesn't want to do.
Refuses to
do.
Yes,
there we go. There
right,
we go.
All right.
And that's, I mean, to me, that is sort of the vein of Indie Film Cafes. We try to show the movies, generally speaking, that even Riff Trax won't do, because they're, you know, they're trying to do the more popular movies.
See, the thing is, most people who love Riff Trax and Mystery Science Theater think they're watching the worst movies. And to me, like, this is a good gateway into the world of slinky movies, but you ain't seen nothing yet.
Yeah.
The level of hell just keeps going deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And every time you think you've seen the worst movie, I guarantee you I will find you a worse
one. Because sometimes they've done movies on Mystery Science Theater that turn out to be, like, kind of good movies, like Carnival of Souls. That wasn't actually that bad of a movie.
Carnival of Souls is a decent movie.
And now
movie.
People, it's coming out as kind of a cult classic or something.
It's been a cult classic.
It's been a cult classic.
Yeah, so
Burke Harvey, baby.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that was on Misty at all, because that, or Riff Trax.
That's an older one.
Yeah, Riff Trax is a little different. They will go after non-stinky movies and sort of do their
versions. Well, they did like Twilight and stuff. Not saying that's not a stinky movie.
Yeah, that is a pretty stinky movie.
I've never seen Twilight.
But they've done like Harry Potter too and sure. stuff
they,
like
really?
That. Yeah, I believe yeah. so.
Oh,
like
I need to watch that.
They've done some more mainstream films.
They do mainstream ones too, because I think that's what they wanted to get away from Mystery
right.
Science Theater.
I mean, let's face it. The main reason Mystery Science Theater did the movies that they did on Mystery Science Theater is because they were going for anything that was out in the public domain for their television
exactly.
station in Minneapolis at the time. So
right. So then all of a sudden they got this big, you know, thing. They were able to do bigger movies, but they never wanted... I think the plan was never to do movies that are, like, really, you know, big in the mainstream because, mm-hmm. You know, and so Riff Trax wanted to probably do something different, you know, do different.
Well, because of the way they did it, they could just have you sync up a track and then they didn't have to pay for the rights to the movie, you know?
Right, right. So, and this is something I've always explained to some of our other co-hosts, and that I love really, really, really good, excellent films, and I love really, really terrible, bad failures.
Mm-hmm.
I dislike mediocrity. I dislike that sort of stuff in the middle that's kind of meh, or
that's just boring.
Well, it's boring to him, but a lot of other people love it. So I don't listen to him.
To me, I just don't.
All right,
like
so
it.
Give me an example of a movie that you think is not a stinker, but is also not a great film. It's just boring.
Okay, to me, the perfect example is a movie called Tequila Sunrise.
Oh,
one of the most forgettable, boring. Typical Hollywood movie. Everyone sort of phones in their performance. It's forgettable. The moment you walk out of the theater, you forget everything that happened because it doesn't matter.
I will say one that I'm pretty sure that I remember you saying, Gone with the Wind.
Oh, yeah. I can't stand that film.
And that movie is so classic. Like,
yeah.
It's such a...
I watched it and didn't find it all that compelling, except the very end where, you know, I thought the end was kind of interesting, where she finally gives in to this rapey husband, and he's like, nope, I'm just going to walk away, and what am I going to do?
No,
I don't care.
This soap opera-y, nasty, awful thing. I hated it when I had to sit through it. It was just awful.
It's long, you know.
There are other things I really dislike that other people love. You know, I've never liked the Yellow Brick Road movie.
Oh, Wizard of Oz?
I loved it as a kid.
But
yeah.
I've always, I was never a big fan of Citizen Kane. And I mean, I can appreciate it, right? I can appreciate it for what it was at the time. Just nowadays, it's too... Like, my dad and I were watching it for the first time, like, a few years ago, and we had never seen it, and we're like, you know, we've never seen Citizen Kane, let's watch this. We sat down, and we're watching, like, why do we want to see about this, you know, newspaper tycoon? Like, what was, like, interesting about this guy, you know? Even that, when you found out what it was, you're like, okay.
Like, it's a metaphor. It's not just a thing. That we can't name.
It's Orson Welles. And Orson Welles is pretty awesome.
Yeah. If you haven't seen Citizen Kane, then sorry, you just got spoiled.
No, you didn't say what Rosebud was, and because I went shh, and you didn't say. So don't say.
Okay.
It's Orson Welles' magical vajayjay.
It is.
Yeah. And on that note.
So we will say goodbye for this particular episode. Thank you very, very much for joining us. Please, if you get a chance, stop by IndieFilmCafeReviews.com and also go to our Patreon page and slip us a buck if you need.
Patreon.com/IndieFilmCafe.
We appreciate it. Continuity Monkey always needs a new pair of shoes.
We also got SickFlickProductions.com, which hopefully will be updating soon.
Mm-hmm. And please turn in next month and listen to what kind of wacky movie that we'll put
we
up
never
on
know
Indie
what
Film
we're
Cafe.
Gonna play. We're gonna do next.
That's
so
right.
That's the fun part.
And hopefully, Joe, we will see you again.
Yay!
Yes, we had a fun time
with you,
Joe.
I had fun.
All right, we appreciate your efforts. Thank you all very much, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Whatever.